Your tech business is in a race to stay ahead of the competition. And you might be wondering if China could be your next move. But to work out whether China is the right opportunity, there are lots of things you'll need to know, from customs compliance to cybersecurity. To explore important questions like how to protect your intellectual property, how Chinese law might affect your business, and how to check the background of potential business partners, visit gov.uk/digital and tech China. See the potential, know the challenge.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Ooh, 3 minutes after 12 is the time. And yeah, that's our weekly adventures in the shallow end of life. And given the depth of the waters that we've been exploring together for the last 2 hours, there is an air of the crunching gear change, isn't there, to mix my metaphors horribly. But do bear with. I generally guarantee some laughter in the course of this hour. What we do is invite you to ring in with a question, any question you want. And the only rules are rules of dullness and repetition. So if we think your question is boring, please don't take offence. Politely move along. Free up your space in the queue for the next customer. And if we can remember dealing with it relatively recently, we'll probably send you packing as well. Although that second rule is very flimsy, given the age of Keith and me these days and the appallingness of our short-term memories. And then if you hear someone else ask a question to which you know the answer, you're duty-bound to ring in and provide it. Various prizes, various treats in store. There is the Mystery Hour round of applause, one of the highest accolades that British radio can bestow. And then there is what we call the Ray Liotta. The Ray Liotta, which is a special bespoke message recorded by the Hollywood legend Ray Liotta, paraphrasing one of his most famous film phrases, "If you build it, he will come," from Field of Dreams, of course, and he has recorded our own version, which if your qualifications for answering the question that you answer, in fact, on any topic, on any day, on any phone-in on this programme, for example, if we were doing a phone-in about bouncy castles and you rang in as the inventor of the bouncy castle, you'd get a Ray Liotta. It's almost as if you've lived the topic under discussion, which in the context of Mystery Hour is obviously a lot easier or a lot more likely to happen than it is in the context of other phone-ins and conversations. I guess if we were having a phone-in about American politics and Joe Biden rang in, he'd probably get a Ray Liotta. But not necessarily, Joe, Mr. President. Not necessarily. I don't want anyone counting chickens. 5 minutes after 12 is the time. I shall bark the phone number at you. Randomly, really, and often irrelevantly, given how hard it is to get through. But sometimes it's like a verbal reflex for me. Sometimes in life, I'll be sitting at the table and I'll say, "Could you pass the salt, please? 03456060973. Or I might say, "Could I have the black pepper? 6 minutes after 12 is the time." They become like sort of part of the furniture of your vocabulary after a while. So I will, the number I read out will be, or read out, it's flipping burnt in my brain. The number I recite will be the real number to get through. But I guess the days of me being able to say to you, when I say the number, it means there are phone lines free. Those days may be behind us. But bear with. Nick's in Norwich to kick things off. Nick, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Has anyone ever smoked a cigarette in space?
It's unlikely, isn't it?
I don't know.
No, nor do I. I mean, you smoke everywhere back in the day. And
it used to be good for you.
That's a very good point. It didn't for younger listeners, but there used to be plenty of people queuing up to advertise cigarettes claiming that they were good for your health, including, I think, qualified doctors. I would have thought that there'd be health and safety issues that have nothing to do with inhalation and everything to do with combustion, wouldn't you?
I would have thought so.
Yeah. Well,
I wondered if anyone knew for sure.
Yeah. Well, it is probably one of those questions to which the answer is almost certainly no. But the only way we can go definitive is by someone ringing in to answer yes with the correct justifications and qualifications. Is this the clincher, Nick, as to whether or not you apply to NASA?
No, I was watching Event Horizon and they're all smoking on there and I was like, that happens in real life.
And I just like, oh, I'd make a great astronaut, me, but oh, I don't know if I could give up that. If I could give up the tobacco. We'll try and find out for you. Next is Anthony and Chigwell. Anthony, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, mate.
Is there any muscle in the human body that we haven't got conscious control of If so, what is it, where is it, and could we practice to use it?
Well, I mean, you're only supposed to ask one question.
Sorry.
That's all right.
It would automatically lead on, wouldn't it?
No, because if the answer is yes, then the third
bit...
Pipe down, Anthony. I've got to think this one through. If there is a muscle in the body that we don't have any conscious control of, then how the hell would we be able to practice using it?
Well, my mum could wiggle her ears. And I've never been able to do it, could you?
Well, wasn't that the title of your second album? No, but you can't have a muscle that you have no conscious control of that you could then exercise. That's impossible. Your mum's wiggly ears have got nothing to do with...
Oh, you must have. People can curl their tongue in half and things like that.
Yeah, but that's got nothing to do with the question that you're asking, because they have got control over that muscle. Just because you haven't doesn't... I mean, it's a...
You might not concentrate in that area.
Your heart. Your heart.
Not that type of muscle.
Ah, we got a round of applause, mate. Step pedant. No, I'm having it. No conscious control over your heart. Conscious control over your heart. You can't just flex it. But if there was, then you wouldn't be able to... Do you know, I said that. I thought I was being so clever. I glanced at my screen. There's about 500 people have sent me the word heart already, so I'll give the credit to them. Anthony, mind how you go. That's my first round of applause of the day. Do you know, back in the day when I used to be a bit of a show-off, I know, unbelievable, isn't it? But we can all change. I would take regularly 8 rounds of applause before the 12:30 news. I think we all enjoy it more these days, don't we? It could be Keith's influence, this, actually. Keith is a great, what you might call... ego corrective. Michael is in Tunbridge Wells. Michael, question or answer?
It's a question, please.
Carry on.
It's to do with it's a sports question. It's to do with darts. In darts, when a player needs to finish and he or she needs to get a double, single, and treble all in one go, it's called Shanghai.
Single, double, triple to finish.
Yeah, it's called Shanghai, and I want to know why it's called Shanghai.
It's all in the same, isn't it? It's all in the same bed for a proper Shanghai. A little Shanghai would be 3 different numbers. Why is it called a Shanghai?
Yeah.
Sometimes with word ones, it might be rhyming slang and stuff like that. So I try and string out the caller from the question, Michael, or the call from the questioner, in the hope that the answer will pop into my brain. And I
you haven't got it.
I've got nothing at the moment, but I'm going to give myself another 8 seconds until 12:11. Shanghai, Shanghai noon, spoon. Three, it's not going to come, is it? I've got nothing.
No, it's not.
I've got nothing. All right, mate, you're on the board. You're on the board. What is a Shanghai in the context of darts? 11:11 is the time, and we've already done the heart muscle one. There was darts on the other night, and of all the sports that are weird without an audience, it might sound odd, but darts, for me, has been the weirdest. You'd think it would be football. And to be fair, the Six Nations were certainly strange. But darts without an audience, almost robs darts of its entire point. Particularly the Worlds, where you've got the fancy dress at Ali Pali and you've got all the fun and frolics going on in the background. I mean, sometimes the darts seems like an unnecessary distraction from all the partying that's going on. But yeah, all right. I guess radio for people watching darts on obscure TV channels at the moment is a little bit esoteric. 12:11, Graham is in Holsworthy in Devon. Graham, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Go on, then.
It's about the muscles you have no control over, no conscious control over.
Yeah.
I have Tourette's.
Okay.
I have motor tics.
Oh.
So that is based around my neck, my shoulders, my eyes, my breathing, all sorts of tics, and I have no control over when I do them and how often I do them.
No, of course you don't. Why is that? If that's not a stupid question.
No, it's a very good question. It's chemicals in the brain which communicate wrongly, that's the wrong word, that don't communicate correctly. And at that point, there's a muscular...
All of our muscle deployment involves an impulse being sent from the brain to the relevant muscle. So your impulses, the chemical messages,
they misfire,
get sent off in all sorts of directions, whether you want them to or not.
Yes.
Wow.
And mine, I don't have verbal tics, I have physical tics. So it could be verbal, but mine come out as motor tics, yeah.
I that's a perfect answer. Your qualifications are pretty impressive. Would you?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Would you allow me to give you one of these?
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
Well, I did not expect that, so I expected a round of applause. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay. Well, you must also take your round of applause as well. You can't get more qualified than literally being in not in control of muscles while speaking to me on the radio. I love that, Graham. Thank you, mate.
No problem.
12:13 is the time, and that didn't, by the way, just for the record, that didn't involve the rescinding of my round of applause for answering heart to the question, because that was actually also correct. It just wasn't perhaps as replete with personal qualifications as Graham's answer was. Reg is in Barrow in Furness. Reg, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Why does the wind gust when it's a storm and it's going round in centre? Why is it not a constant wind speed? Why does it gust?
So the ups and downs of a windstorm, rather
than... Yeah, but
than,
if you're on the coast and there's nothing in the way, no buildings or anything like that, why is it not as constant wind speed?
Yeah, so I quite like that. A lot of wind around at the moment. What's it like in Barrow?
Very windy.
Is it? I got a message off my producer this morning. She said, I'm going to be late for work. I'm going to be late for work. I'm on the train. Terrible wind. And I thought, that's a bit too much information.
Yeah, other passengers wouldn't like that.
I should have done that. That's what I should have replied. I should have replied that. Cause... Anyway, we shall try and find out for you. Why does wind get sort of gust? There you go. I thought it was going to be an etymology word when he said that. Where does the word gust come from? Probably German. Don't at me. Just unless, of course, you want to ring in and tell me why wind gusts. Why does it go up and down? Why, you know what gust means. It's not like a constant force. It's a whoosh, whoosh. Whoosh.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:18 is the time. Some breaking news. Prince William. Someone's just shouted at Prince William in a car park, is your family racist? And Prince William has replied, no, my family is not racist. So I think we can all put that unpleasant episode in British royal history behind us now, can't we? That's all done and dusted. Crack on, lads. 18 minutes after 12 is the time. Some other breaking news. I have been rather sceptical in the past about the existence of so-called cancel culture and culture wars and woke becoming the new euphemism for anti-racist. But there is actually quite a good example of cancel culture in the news today. In the new bill that Priti Patel is steering through Parliament adds noise to the list of things that the police can close down your protest for. So that really is cancel culture, in the context, chiefly, I imagine, of Black Lives Matter and Extinction Rebellion. If you're too noisy, which is, of course, a judgment that will be made entirely by the authorities, then if this law comes to pass, then that will be grounds for shutting down your entire protest. So maybe I'm close this morning to acknowledging that cancel culture is actually real. If they're passing laws that are designed to provide a kind of statutory footing designed to silence protests from, I don't think it's left-wing to be in support of Black Lives Matter or indeed of Extinction Rebellion. You describe it more as a sort of belief in fundamental rights and equalities. But if that's getting up the nose of the current government and a lot of their fall-up tugging fans. So there it is. First evidence yet that cancel culture might actually be enshrined in law by the current government, who are, of course, simultaneously very anti-woke. 20 minutes after 12 is the time. Enough politics. Back to the fun and frolics of Mystery Hour. Why is single, double, treble, all in the same slice of the pie on the darts board, why is that called a Shanghai? And why does wind gust? You can answer. There's money on the board. Oh, and I forgot that first question from Norwich. Has anyone ever had a smoke in space? 03456060973. I like it. It's got a certain ring to it, though. I don't know why. I just thought of Jamiroquai having a smoke in space. Yifat's in Hampshire. Yifat, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
I was wondering why in cartoons, and I don't think it has to do with the maker of the cartoon, the human characters always have four fingers, so not five and not three.
Correct. Well, and human characters.
Well, I mean, not dogs or cats.
You've just ruined one of my favourite bits of cartoon trivia. Mickey Mouse has three fingers.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I didn't do my bloody homework, did I?
don't know if you're expected to ring in on that. The answer, which I know because it's come up on Mystery Hour before, and I'll drop another bit of animation trivia into the mix momently. The answer is really boring and really obvious.
Can I say something?
Yeah, anything.
I thought that possibly it is because initially it was drawn by hand and it was actually quite difficult to fit five fingers into a palm of a hand. But that's not true for a long time. And, you know, South Park and Simpsons and all of those, they're four fingers.
No, they are. And you're kind of right. I mean, Disney said, I don't think it was Walt Disney, I think it was the Disney Corporation, I love this line, that they couldn't give Mickey Mouse five fingers because of the scale and it looked like his hand was a bunch of bananas. But the short answer is that it's much, much easier to draw three fingers and a thumb because the hand is the hardest thing to animate, the hardest thing to draw. Because if you think about it, compared to any other body part, there's so much going on. There's so much movement and angle and perspective. So somebody somewhere back in the mists of time discovered that if you just drew three fingers and a thumb or four digits, then and think how many frames you'd have to draw in old school animation, then you would have you just make life a hell of a lot easier. So I think the phrase economy of line has been deployed by animators in the past. That's if it was on University Challenge, that would be the you go you're Fat Hampshire and you'd go economy of line is the answer.
Okay, I'll accept that, although I think in digital times
Take it up with the animators. You fat, take it up with the animators. Don't bring me into this isn't my fight. Do you want the next bit of trivia?
Now, if I knew one of them, I would.
You would. I will have to get you in touch with an animator. Take it. Yeah, take him to task. It might also be complicated, even with the computer animation. There might be that the hand would be. There'd be so much going on; it would be quite distracting. This is now Keith's Corner, a new feature on the show that we launched on Monday, forgot about, and then just remembered. Keith has just provided me with a piece of choice animation trivia. Would you like to hear it?
Let's do it. Yeah.
In The Simpsons, the only character to be animated with five digits or four fingers and a thumb was God.
Wow. Well, so maybe your theory is rubbish.
What?
Because they can do it. Yeah.
No, it's still hard. It's not rubbish. It's still.
You need to accept it on occasion.
It's still harder to do five. They just did it once because it was God. It proves my point. It's like a divine demonstration of my own correctness.
So, no, technically they can do it, but they're actually saying something here. They're saying those are not really humans. Maybe.
They're saying God is unique, I think. That's what I took away from it. I'm going to take a round of applause for this one. Thank you very much. Thank you, you fat. I'm happy to have entertained you and indeed illuminated you. And thanks to Keith's Corner, educated you. That better be true, Keith. You can't be yanking my chain on the show and then me passing it on to the mass ranks of listeners like Stephen in Rothwell. Stephen, question or answer?
A question, please, James.
Carry on.
When they first built the atomic bomb, how far did they know how to stand away from it?
Well, they didn't, did they? There was all sorts of people got poisoned.
Obviously they did, but obviously they put them in the trenches, etc. And they all had the dark goggles on. You know, whoosh, 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 that gust of wind comes towards
you. So
they didn't
put everyone far enough away, but they took a view on how far enough away everybody should be. How did they arrive at that figure there? The one, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Everybody got poisoned from it.
Who decided how far away you should be? Was it on Bikini Atoll that they tested it? Have I got that right? Or is that just one of those weird things?
No, I just watched it on a programme, Manhattan Project, the other night. And it just intrigues me, especially when you spoke about the whoosh, whoosh, whoosh of the wind blowing through the air.
Yes, but because if the wind changed, then obviously the distance you're standing away from the explosion is going to become... it's going to become very different. Its effectiveness is going to be different. All right, it's on the list.
The blast, basically the blast, James, of it coming through.
Yeah. Who decided how far away they should stand when they started detonating atomic bombs, testing atomic bombs? I like that, Stephen. I shall do my best to get you an answer. Questions still waiting answers. Shanghai and darts, what's that about? Gusts of wind, why? Smoking in space, can you? Has anyone? And atomic bombs, who decided how far away they should stand from the first tests? 26 after 12. Theo. Gosh, two Theos in one show. It's an embarrassment of riches. This one's in Manchester. Question or answer, Theo?
Answer.
Carry on.
So the question was, has anyone smoked a cigarette in space?
Yes.
And Jerry Liniger, who was a US astronaut, he was on the space station Mir, and he said the cosmonauts have smoked and they used to get cartons of cigarettes delivered.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it says it in his autobiography.
That's relatively recent as well, isn't it? Isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know when he was up there, but...
Well, when did Mir go into space?
I think it was the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, it's post-Apollo, though.
The Peregrine Falcon. The fastest living thing on the planet. Until that is Marcus from Meltham here, caught wind of Volkswagen's 3 months on us offer. Just look at him go. Such speed, such grace. Magnificent.
Enjoy 3 months on us, on eligible stock vehicles, up to 3.2% APR representative. You'll need to be quick. Contact your local Volkswagen retailer with Solutions PCP. 3 months discount is provided by reducing our standard interest rate. Ordered and delivered by May 4th, 2021. Stock vehicles only. APR may change April 1st, 2021. Minimum 46-month agreements only. Excludes Golf Hatch M8 and all electric and e-hybrid vehicles. T's and C's apply. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Finance.
That's what I meant. It's not... It's,
yeah, yeah.
Qualifications, have you read it? Is it in his written?
I've read it, yes. It's a great book.
It's a fantastic result. And so, I mean, fairly conclusive proof that people have smoked in space, given that the Russians were having...
Yeah, which is interesting,
isn't
because
it?
Of the pure oxygen environment.
It probably gets clean 10 times quicker than it does anywhere else in human inhabitation, doesn't it? Do they have to go outside, do we know, to smoke?
Not that I'm aware.
That was another Keith's Corner joke, so I will either take the credit for it, or if you like it, I'll take the credit. If you don't like it, I shall pass the blame back to my friend and colleague, Keith.
You can take the credit for it.
Oh, no, you're right. A round of applause for me. All right. No, not for me, for Theo. What am I talking about? Oh, my God, the ego is out of control today. Keith, you're not doing your job. What a lovely answer. Jerry Liniger. I'd never heard of him. I'm not a big space nut, but that is an astonishing little... Nick in Norwich will be over the moon with that one. I don't know whether he would have been expecting a definitive answer. 28 minutes after 12 is the time. 03456060973 is the number that you need. Pauline is in Twickenham. Pauline, question or answer?
Hi there. Question, please.
Yes.
My daughter-in-law is not allergic to anything.
Okay.
And not even
her mother-in-law. Boom, boom, tish,
no,
I'm here all week.
Not.
Try
boom,
the veal.
Boom, no, you nasty. And her two first grandchildren were fine. But
right.
The third has got so many allergies. I just wonder... Why during pregnancy, one of the big allergies is egg.
Is it?
Why through pregnancy that she could make myself and her poached eggs and her eat eggs?
Yeah.
And yet the baby that was born is highly allergic to eggs and a lot of other things.
That you've overcomplicated it now. I don't know why you brought eggs into it. Can we? Is there a more general question that we can get our teeth into?
Well, just why is someone born with allergies when the mother and two previous grandchildren...
Oh, well, this I do know.
How?
Well, the allergies are partly genetic and partly environmental.
So...
Don't say eggs. Don't you start coming back at me with your eggs.
I won't do that. But I don't understand. I can environment. You're saying so. Everyone that's born previously, including herself, has not been allergic to anything, even with the environment.
But
being
you don't
similar.
Know that she might be allergic to lots of things. She's just never come across them yet. To get no, I mean that. It sounds funny, but it wasn't meant to be. To get a sort of allergic reaction.
Yeah.
But the answer is. That the allergies, so, I mean, you're more likely to be allergic to X, Y, eggs, Y or Z if your parents are, but it's not guaranteed. But then there are also environmental impacts as well.
Right.
And it's not about being allergic to eggs when you're pregnant, is it? It's about listeria and it's about the danger of getting a particular type of food poisoning that would be more dangerous because you're pregnant. So the answer is allergies are both genetic and environmental.
Okay.
Yeah?
All right.
You happy?
Thank you.
You sure?
I'm not happy.
I know you're not. You see, I know. You see, this is the problem. So, all right, talk to me about eggs then. Go on.
eggs. Yeah. Well, that's eggs and things like that are super allergic to this little one.
Yeah.
Massively. And just being able to eat eggs and things yourself and have a child that then carries through as completely very, very highly allergic. That,
so how come the baby is allergic to eggs but the mum isn't? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Well, the answer is that it's not just, this one isn't a genetic one. This is, or it might have skipped a generation or two. What's great grandma's relationship with eggs like?
I don't know. I never got to answer.
There
after.
You go. Well, I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry for dragging up that personal tragedy.
No.
It's on the board, all right? I think I've answered it definitively. I think I'm conscious that you don't, and I'm no longer the person that would completely ignore your misgivings and trouser my round of applause anyway, Pauline. I'm a bigger, better James, so I'm going to try to get you an excellent answer to your question.
Oh, I love that excellent idea.
It was extraordinary. Thank you so much as well.
Extraordinary,
wasn't it? Just if anybody knows what Pauline's wanging on about, then give me a ring and answer her question.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 12:35. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the conversation continues, or Mystery Hour at least continues. I just need to issue a public service announcement. One of my mates is listening who teaches Krav Maga, which is a self-defence technique popularised, I think, by the Israeli army, the Israeli secret service, and he's absolutely fuming with me for citing karate in the context of a conversation about self-defence. So other self-defence methods are available, and having seen him in action doing his Krav Maga, I can tell you that it is, in the context of self-protection, it is an absolutely magnificent thing to learn. I have to do that because he's a very sensitive flower, despite being very good at Krav Maga. 12:36 is the time. Marcus is in Henley. Marcus, question or answer?
Yeah, it's on Shanghai, James.
Carry on.
If you'd like to know, Shanghai is a very popular darts game that's played in the pubs because it means everyone can get involved.
Yes.
And
this is going a bit chicken and egg, isn't it?
Two people from monopolising it. So you can have one person going for one, you total up your scores, then you go for three, then you go right around the clock to 20, and then you end up with a bullseye. And it just means that the whole pub can play, they can put a pound in, and they play it like that. And I think the way it got its name was...
this is the good stuff.
Because I asked this guy down the pub, and he said, well, you know, the Earl of Dartmouth game.
Yes, very strong.
And he went out to China, and that's where he discovered it.
You see, the producer doesn't know why that's funny, because she hasn't worked with me for long enough. So she's put you through thinking that this is a proper answer to the question. How many people listening? What was the last rage? Was it 1.3 or 1.2 million weekly listeners? So God knows how many we had when I came up with my Earl of Dartmouth nugget. Keith was here. He was listening, even though he didn't work here at the time. How many out of the listeners we've got now, however many it is, will have the first idea what you're talking about? I do not know, but that was lovely. I mean, Marcus is absolutely right. If you're not aware of this, darts itself got its name because it is still the right of an aristocrat in this country to muster a force. And they used to do archery training on the village green, usually called the butts. That's why a lot of towns, a lot of areas still have streets or quarters called the butts. And one day it was raining, so the Earl of Dartmouth took his archers into the house. He took them into the Great Hall, where they didn't normally get into, and they tried to do archery in there, but the Countess of Dartmouth got really cross because they kept shooting arrows into her tapestries, and so they made little tiny arrows and started throwing them at the target, and that is how darts was invented, and it's named after the Earl of Dartmouth. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. John, you've got to give something to the VIP listeners sometimes, Keith. Am I right or am I right? John's in Newcastle. John, question or answer?
It's an answer, James, Carol. And it's for how far away were the men and who decided with regards to the nuclear bombs. Well, my grandfather was at a nuclear test in the 1950s. I'm a nuclear test descendant. And Christmas Island in particular, they were 20 miles away, and it was the Ministry of Defence who decided. Some people weren't far away at all. One of the pilots who dropped the bombs actually had to fly through the mushroom cloud afterwards to collect samples. A lot of these men ended up dying quite young of, you know, rare cancers. My grandfather died 10 years after he washed the aircraft down after the plane had flown through the mushroom cloud. He died in 1969 of a blood cancer. So, yeah, no, whatever distance it varied for different people, and it wasn't.
So there wasn't really a hard and fast rule, and whatever was in place, they were kind of making up on the spot.
Well, I can account for many of the nuclear test veterans, some of who are still alive and trying to fight for compensation and justice. They sat on the beach with the hands on the eyes, with the backs to the sea, and the explosion went off, and then they were told to turn and look at it, and they saw all the bones in the hands during the flash, apparently, like an X-ray. It's something that's very personal. There was obviously, sorry, I'm a bit nervous.
No, don't be nervous.
I had a nerve sheath tumour removed myself a couple of years ago, which got me starting to look into my family history. And
what, and you wondered whether that might be traced back to your granddad?
You know, you wonder, you know, there's been a lot of sort of... I mean, I'd like to shout out Susie Boniface at the Daily Mirror. I'd encourage everyone to go check out her work, a series of articles called The Damned. By the Daily Mirror. It's a great piece of work.
Susie also, of course, writes as Fleet Street Fox. She's been doing some astonishing campaigning journalism in this field.
It's absolutely amazing. The charity, the British Nuclear Test Veterans Association, are currently trying to fight for a medal for the veterans, at least, because they've not even been thanked or compensated. Johnny Mercer is kind of the enemy of us right now. We're trying to work with him to come to some kind of arrangement. So you've got the British Nuclear Test Veterans Association and Lab Rats, a group called the Lab Rats, which is online, which works with all the veterans worldwide. Atomic Veterans in America, they're called Atomic Veterans over there. You know, the various tests they did in the Nevada desert.
And then the people in the front line, as is so often the case, they kind of just got forgotten.
Just the national servicemen doing the duty at the time.
Was it really?
You know? Yeah, yeah.
Well, I never.
Just a national serviceman. A lot of these men were just national servicemen sent to the deaths, basically. So I'm glad somebody asked that question. I'm glad it was.
I bet you are. Were you listening, or were you
listening? Yeah.
Tell me the truth. Are you sure? Because you're such an expert on this. I wouldn't have been that surprised.
I would not call myself an expert. But
well, you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Yeah, but for the last few years, I'd say everybody, please go check out Susie's work.
And if you're interested,
support the campaign for the veterans to get a medal. Apparently, the advisory military subcommittee didn't think that they were worth a medal. They didn't think the going to nuclear test was risky or rigorous enough. You know, so I think it was a few months ago the veterans got a letter from the advisory military subcommittee.
I shall certainly take your exhortation myself. I'll find out more about it too. Have a
brilliant. And I love Mystery Hour. Sorry, it's such a sad subject.
Well, I don't think you should apologise, because I mean, behind all the fun and frolics, John, I mean, it is actually an exercise in enlightenment. It is, and your call is a perfect example. I now know more. I used to say as a catchphrase, you will know more by 1 o'clock than you do now, and you are a perfect exemplar of that promise. So I should be thanking you, and so I do.
Brilliant, James. Take care.
Hang on, I've got to give you a round of applause.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to give you a Ray Liotta, but and I appreciate this is a poignant and very personal story involving elements of tragedy, and the Ray Liotta is usually a bit of fun, but it's a coin with two sides, and this is its very serious side, John.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
Because, simply, you could not have been better qualified to answer that question, could you?
All right, thanks. Take care, James.
All right, mate. You mind how you go. 12:43 is the time. Sue is in Grey. Sue, question or answer?
It's a question, please.
Yours.
Right. Why is it that lab technicians, doctors always wear white coats when that is most likely white to get stained, if you just don't want to think about the implications there? But you know what I mean? I went to the guys in St. Thomas's old medical operating theatre, and even then they had a white coat hanging up from the days when they sawed off legs and there must have been blood and all sorts everywhere.
Yeah.
And still doctors wear white coats and lab technicians wear white coats.
I don't understand why you're confused about this. I thought you just answered the question yourself.
Oh, did I?
Yeah. Well, tell me again why you're confused about it.
Well, why white? Because really they're going to get covered in all sorts.
Yeah.
All over, you know.
Yeah.
So wouldn't they wear a colour that's darker?
So that you wouldn't know they were filthy?
Well.
Do you see?
Yeah.
Do you see now? Do you see now? Do you really? You got.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So they're white because they show the stains.
Yeah. I mean, they must be changing their white coats all the time.
Yeah, but what would you want? If someone was going to cut you open and take out your appendix, would you want them to be wearing a manky old apron that you couldn't see the stains on? Or would you want them to be wearing something that you could see with your own little eyes was as clean can be?
Well, why not wipeable?
You're coming back for more. What do you mean wipeable? Like a tablecloth?
But, well, PVC, you know.
Stop going to keep your dirty... coming on here with your PVC enthusiasms. It's not that sort of programme, Sue. No, it is very simply because, obviously, someone's going to ring in and correct me on this now because I'm being all patronising and superior. But I imagine it's so that you know that the doctor is clean. You know that they're wearing really clean... And the doctor knows he's clean and the likelihood of accidentally importing germs into a medical atmosphere is minimised. Round of applause for me. Peter is in Reading. Question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Why do refs in football wear long socks?
To keep their calves warm.
I don't know.
Well, why else?
Could be.
To keep their calves warm. Why wouldn't they?
The players, it makes sense, right? Because they've got shin pads on.
Yeah.
So you need to tuck those away. But the refs don't wear shin pads.
But all socks are long and not all players wear shin pads.
I thought you had to in football.
Oh, maybe you do. It's been a while since I was playing at, you know, national level. I will put it on the list. I don't know that you're going to get a satisfactory answer, but in many ways you might be thinking, I've already had one, James. It's to keep their calves warm. Why wouldn't they? I mean, you mean, why would they want to wear ankle socks? It is cold out there most days. And it makes them look smart. I don't know. There'll be a referee listening.
It's not always cold?
It's not always cold, but I mean, it's a uniform. I don't know. Why do refs wear long socks? 0345 606 0973.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:50 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Question's still in need of answers. I just consult my archive. We've done that. Should I still have a Shanghai answer? Why is that? Why is that thing in darts where you go in the same segment, single, double, triple? So it would be 120, wouldn't it, for the biggest possible checkout on a Shanghai. Biggest possible checkout is 100 and... would be two trebles and a double top, wouldn't it? No, two trebles and a bull would be even higher. So 170 is the biggest possible checkout. Giving me duff information. 12:51 is the time. Cyril is in Ljubljana, I think, in Slovenia. Cyril, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
For the question of why are there usually four fingers on a cartoon's hand?
I thought I dealt with that quite expertly, Cyril.
Oh, you did.
Oh, good.
You were in right. I'm just
good.
Adding to your answer.
Welcome.
But
welcome
I think
aboard.
That I'm adding with some competence.
Oh, good. Go on.
Because I'm a comics draftsman, I'm cartoonist, and I'm actually in production of two comics at the moment. So
fantastic.
I'm drawing sometimes five and sometimes four fingers. And even more, I enrolled a post-degree doctoral study, and I'm actually studying post-degree studies. And one of the questions is also the question of the number of the fingers.
Wow. Over to you.
Okay. So you were in right. There's this economy of draftsmanship that you basically want to simplify your drawing as much as possible, as much as art and readers permit. So this is why four fingers come in handy.
Yes.
But there's also another reason, which is on the side of the reader. Both primary motor cortex and primary sensory cortex don't need five fingers for our mind, our inner eye, to understand comics, because the thumb is so overrepresented in the motor and sensory regions of our brain that the number of other fingers is not so important. So even if you read comics, you wouldn't miss a finger or two. So it can go three or four fingers, but you would miss a thumb. So there's an inner brain reason why you don't need five fingers. And just kudos to you and your team. This morning, you were excellent, and I'm thanking you deeply from my heart, because my mother is also a two-time survivor of sexual assault. You did it also for her. So this morning, this morning was just heart-touching. Thank you.
Well, no, thank you. We covered an awful lot of territory in that contribution, and I'm incredibly grateful to you. Where can people see more of your work if they want to?
Well, actually, I even got a cartoon published in Guardian a couple of years ago, and I immediately went and count the fingers. I didn't show the fingers. It was a Brexit cartoon of Icarus flying with all the flags of then 28 yes. UK countries, and the British flag is leaving the wings
that.
Of Icarus.
I should look that up.
And there are four fingers on the feet.
I'm going to give you three on the show today. That's pretty strong. Qualifications. You get one of these, Cyril, with my gratitude.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. You build it.
I got it.
You got it. No, thank you. I can't remember the last time we had three in a row, or three on a show, three in an hour. But Cyril, my thanks to you. That was lovely. 12:54 is the time. And our love, of course, to your mum. That took me by surprise a bit, that. Staying with the other 27 flags on those Icarus wings that Cyril drew for the Guardian, Mike's in Köln in Germany. Mike, question or answer?
James, I have an answer for you.
Well, that's a relief. It's nearly Sheila time. What is your answer? Take it away.
It's about why wind is gusty.
Yes.
It all comes down to fluid flow. There are two states of fluid flow. There's a laminar flow where everything flows smoothly. And there is turbulent flow, where you start to get you get turbulence, and the fluids start to tumble.
Okay.
And the turbulence is caused by the roughness of the ground that the air is traveling over.
Oh.
So when it blows over a house or through a tree or over a hill, then the air will start to tumble. And
so if you were in the middle of the snow, because you've got dunes, because I know the questioner thought that he was detecting gusts. Even when he thought he was in a relatively flat and clear space. But the point is, it could have been, the turbulence could have kicked in at any point previous to the wind reaching Barrow in Furness, couldn't it?
Absolutely. It's a bit like it's the butterfly and the tornado theory. The irregularities, they propagate themselves. But the other thing is that there are many more effects apart from just the roughness of the ground. It might be hot air rising. That
pressure,
another cause
of course, just punching a hole in the other sort of otherwise uniform flow. Qualifications, Mike? That's a lovely answer.
Oh, thank you. Well, my first degree was in environmental sciences, a large part of that being meteorology.
That'll do.
And I'm a sailor.
Oh, well, there you go. All bases covered.
Oh, thank you.
No, thank you. 12:56 is the time. We've got a couple more to tick off. Let's go to Worcester. Chris is there. Chris, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Just waiting on the Shanghai, are we? Is it just the Shanghai? And the long socks. So which one is it?
Long socks. It's a long socks on referees.
And Pauline's eggs. But I don't think anyone's going to have a crack at that one. Why do referees wear long socks?
Okay, so this basically goes back to the initial days of the sport. So back in the 1930s, when the World Cup came about, basically, referees were allowed to wear what they liked. So, for example, the referee in the final actually wore a pair of plus fours golfing trousers to referee the final and a flat cap. A lot of the officials at the tournament actually were coaches of other teams.
Right.
But the Romanian linesman was actually the head coach of the Romanian team.
Oh.
And basically, all they had available kit-wise were the socks from the teams.
So they
and
were
it kind of then evolved and then kind of like migrated into what we see nowadays with that kind of standard of kit has then been kept.
I love it. That'll do nicely. I mean, it's got the sort of charm of simplicity as well, hasn't it? And plausibility, of course. The officials would be linked to other teams, and therefore the only kit and caboodle they'd have, or the only socks they'd have, would be football socks, which are long.
Yeah.
Round of applause for... Oh, hang on, qualifications?
I was a referee in the Worcester District Football League for 15 years back in the 90s.
Were you really? Association?
Yep, I was kind of think I did games up at Brinton's and Chain Wire and did a couple of games at Agbra.
Did you really?
Kind of retired in
For people who don't know, Agbro is like the San Siro of the Midlands, or the Old Trafford of the Midlands. Agbro Stadium, home of the late and much missed Brian Murdoch's famous pies, and of course Agbro soup as well. I wonder if you ever referee my mate Sparky. He used to turn out for Brinton. So he was a proper little talent. He really was. But we'll never know. We'll never know. Round of applause, Chris. Coming up to 12:59, squeeze in one more. Jamie's in Greenwich. Question or answer, Jamie?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
So I'm going to have a crack at the egg.
Well played. Carry on.
So it's a big topic. I'll try and condense it down to a very small amount of time. So it is, as you said, it is nature and it is nurture. It is genetic and environmental. The genetic bit, the way you make antibodies, so antibodies are not just for COVID vaccines. You've got antibodies that are associated with allergies as well. You've got a pack of car from your mum, a pack of car from your dad.
Yes.
You shuffle them up, you make a certain sequence. A little snippet of that sequence gives you a certain shape, and then that shape corresponds to an allergen.
Right.
So the environmental bit, the IgE, which is a specific antibody for allergy, is more for parasites and worms. We don't tend to have parasites and worms in a modern day clean society, inverted commas.
Got it.
So genetic pressure to make good antibodies against parasites and worms has gone. So now we can let all the pesky allergy antibodies through without check.
I think you've done it, haven't you? I think you've nailed it.
It's exactly as you said, though. It's nature and nurture.
Qualifications?
It's a little bit more convoluted. I'm an AME doctor that's got a degree in immunology.
Yeah, that'll do. Round of applause. I'm keeping all the snowflakes sweet today. The producer is very proud of the fact that we've apparently come up with a sound effect that we're going to play when we have a full switchboard, which means we're going to play it for 3 hours a day every day. So quite what the point of this is, I have no idea, but I promised I'd play it. Oh, no, this is for clearing all... We haven't cleared all the questions. We didn't do the Shanghai one. Oh, well, that went well. Here's Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. I think it probably won't surprise people to know that I'm going to talk about violence against women for the rest of the afternoon. I'm going to talk about women's experiences day to day, because I think the problem that we have never fully addressed at all, not remotely, is how day to day women being harmed is in myriad ways, up to and including women being murdered. Many, many women being murdered, often in their own homes. It's not just about the streets, violence against women. Descriptions of women in the tabloid papers contribute to it. Belligerence on social media contributes to it. All kinds of things contribute to it. Every woman has a story. So what is yours?
On your radio, on Global Player, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
It's always nice to get something extra when you've not had to ask for it. And the more extra, the better. A complimentary drink is nice, but is better. At the Hyundai Upgrade event, we've added more savings so you could upgrade to a new Hyundai and get up to £3,000 off. Visit Hyundai.co.uk before the end of March to find out more. T's and C's apply. Saving against list price over 18s and participating dealers only. Savings vary by model. £3,000 off applies to 2020 Santa Fe model only.